Welcome to Reading the Grid with Aaron and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. We wrapped up the triple header with a dramatic Spanish Grand Prix. McLaren dominated with their first front row lockout in Spain since 1998. The team had a historic 1-2 finish, their first in Spain in over 25 years, with Lando Norris taking P2 and Oscar Piastri claiming his fifth win of the season, becoming just the third McLaren driver to score 8 consecutive podiums, joining legends Ayrton Senna and Lewis Hamilton. Charles Leclerc secured P3, marking his first Spanish Grand Prix podium and Ferrari's first in Barcelona since 2017. Fernando Alonso finished P9 for Aston Martin at his home race, securing his first points of the season and becoming the first F1 driver to score points in 21 seasons. Meanwhile, Max Verstappen and George Russell set identical qualifying times and clashed twice in the race. And yes, we've got thoughts on that. But first, Ina, who won your heart in Barcelona?
There were many candidates, including the winner, Oscar Piastri, and Leclerc coming through for P3, although his qualifying shenanigans were not for the faint of heart. However, I chose a different winner of my heart. He may not have had the best race performance, but he had the best arc, Fernando Alonso. Alonso's race weekend was full of highs and lows. During qualifying, when he had only one qualifying lap pretty early in Q3, which was the same strategy as Leclerc, he set a good enough time to be P5 at the time. He was extremely jubilant, even more so than in Monaco, and went for a victory lap where he waved to the crowd. Since it was his home Grand Prix, it makes sense that his reaction was more enthusiastic than we would expect based on these results, which ultimately saw him starting the race in P10. In the race itself, when he was the only Aston Martin on the grid, he did not look very promising. He lost positions at the start, spun out on his own, and Aaron, I thought of you when it happened, ended up in the gravel.
Me too. I thought it was his own personal nod to Lance Stroll.
I thought it was a wink. It was like,
I
look,
did
I
too.
think of you. He again looked to finish outside the points. However, as he later himself stated, he never gives up and he wanted to give everything he could or had for the fans who came to see him and support him. Thus, he ultimately ended up where he started in P10 and was promoted to P9 due to Max Verstappen's penalty, which we will get into in a bit. He may not have had the best race of his career, but it was still satisfying, and I breathed a sigh of relief when I realized he would finally get points. I was with him in qualifying when he acted like he won the race, and at the end when he actually scored points.
Oh, it was so great to see him score points at his home race and in our predictions. We both threw out a bold prediction, which you had a feeling at some point it would happen. Fernando Alonso scored points in a Grand Prix. So kudos to
Yay.
us. Yay!
Yes. So, who was the person who won your heart, Aaron?
A very unexpected Nico Hülkenberg. He delivered such a standout performance, finishing fifth and securing Sauber's best result in 3 years. He started from 15th on the grid. He capitalized on a strong race, strategic tire choices, and a timely safety car. He worked his way through the field. He even overtook Lewis Hamilton. And as hard as it was to watch Nico go around Hamilton at the end, I was really thrilled for him and the race that he and Sauber put together. They lifted the team from the bottom of the constructors to eighth, which was pretty phenomenal. All of Sauber's 16 points this season have come from Hülkenberg, underscoring his pivotal role in the team's performance.
After the race, I loved his interactions with Bortoleto, where they were hugging with their helmets still on. And even from a picture, you can see how much joy and excitement they both radiated. And I really respected his honesty when he was kind of subdued after this performance and said that there were a number of factors that made him secure this high grid position. He also was very transparent that one of the reasons he was so high up and was able to pass Hamilton was that he had new soft tires, unlike the drivers around him. And for the stint after the safety car, he only had those new soft tires because he was knocked out in Q1. And nobody else around him who made it to Q3 had those new soft tires.
We've always said it does require a little bit of luck in addition to skill, and Hülkenberg very deservedly so benefited from a little bit of luck mixed in with their strategy.
Absolutely. So who broke your heart, Aaron?
Oh gosh, this one's painful. My obvious answer is Lewis Hamilton. I was really thrilled to see that he outqualified his teammate, which hasn't happened very often this season. So I thought that was a great start for him. He had a fantastic start to the race, overtaking Russell and getting into position. It was difficult. So we'll talk about that in Scuderia shenanigans. Outside of the obvious, Kimi Antonelli is my heartbreaker in Spain. This is his third race in a row with no points and second race with a power unit failure resulting in a DNF. He started off this rookie year so strong. Outside of these three aforementioned races, Bahrain was the only other race he finished outside of the points. So 5 out of the 9, he's scored in the points. He's done well. This one was tough to see him go out at the end. And the fact that such a late safety car caused such a disruption didn't help.
It didn't help, although I will always thank him for promoting Leclerc to P3 and showing us Max's true personality. But this triple header was not what he, or probably even Toto, expected or wanted. I loved when there was an interview with Toto and they asked him, "What will you take away from this triple header?" And he responded with suffering, which is very appropriate. And as we mentioned, Mercedes are known to having the best power unit. So what has been happening that Kimi Antonelli DNF 2 times in the last 3 races with mechanical issues?
I don't know. It's concerning, especially because we keep saying that Mercedes is going to have the best engine next year.
Exactly. Since 2014, it's been a common wisdom that they have the best engine. The problem was with the new regulations, that is less of a advantage. But for the next set of regulation, it will be what they call engine formula, in which engines become more important. And yes, the conventional belief is that Mercedes has the best one. So what has been happening to their old engine? It's not that old. And the
No.
thing is, like, I get it if they're customer teams, like what happened to Alonso, where, that cracks out. But they changed the rules. So the manufacturer actually pulls the part, and all the teams that use these parts basically randomly select. So that way, the working team, i.e., Mercedes, cannot save the best.
Parts for them. That makes sense.
So it's very concerning. Race, there was still some. And so before this race, there was still some discussion of who will ultimately be Rookie of the Year. And Kimi Antonelli and Isaac Hadjar were at the top of the list. I think it is clear now that Hadjar, who finished P7 in Barcelona, has this battle firmly in hand.
I think Hadjar's done phenomenal this year. As far as a rookie, I feel like he's running away with it, which I was really hoping it was going to be Kimi. Ina, who broke your heart?
There were several, but one was ac may actually surprise you. It's actually one split into 3 parts. Red Bull strategists, GP's communication skills, and Max Verstappen's belligerent response to an unfortunate series of events. Although he is not my favorite, I always acknowledge that Max is the best driver on the grid. I believe that nobody would have been able to put this Red Bull in a better position than Max. However, Max is very emotional, especially when things don't go his way, and in the world, in the words of George Russell, he lashes out. Max was undone by his team poor strategy call, which is super surprising because we have always praised Red Bull as being on top of strategy. And even if they're not perfect, there's always a very good reason why they thought their strategy would work. Max was on a three-stop strategy, which actually looked like it was going to work out. And it's funny because we always think, oh, fewer pit stops, better results. But as we learned, it's very track dependent. But when the safety car came out and they knew they had very limited number of laps left, why did they box Max to change him on hard tires? Even F1 fans who are not technically savvy would have known that hard tires, which are the slowest compound, would take a long time to warm up. They may not have known how many laps the safety car would be out, but still, they knew it wouldn't be that many. So there wouldn't be enough time for all the drivers around Max to have their soft tires completely go off and for his tires to come into their performance window.
Red Bull should have had an inkling that the safety car would stay out longer because even Hamilton made a comment about they just love holding up the laps on racing. Yes, Max was on old softs, which I believe were only 8 laps old. It's not like they were high teens, low 20s. 8 laps on softs isn't that old. And the safety cars have been staying out, I feel like, for at least 2 or 3 laps longer than one would expect after an accident has been cleaned up.
What I read is that it's actually bad to be on the soft tires behind the safety car because then they cool. And so when you then have to go, like there's going to be a lag or degradation. But I believe that Max was in an open position. Either he stays out on already used soft tires, but that would gain him track positions. He would probably be first, which he would definitely lose to the McLarens and possibly even Leclerc. Or do what he did and still lose position. So, with hindsight, staying out was a preferable strategy. And I cannot imagine that Red Bull's data did not show them that. Very confusing. But they were not the only ones who failed Max. Although GP, Giampiero Lambiasi, Max's race engineer, communicates team messages, there may have been a failure of communication between him and the team because it definitely was a failure of communication between him and Max. Max did not know that he only had hard tires left, and it was hard to blame him. He can't know everything. But GP definitely did, and he obviously did not clarify when he was boxed to change tires that they would be changing his old soft tires for new hard tires. If he knew, there's no way Max would have come in. And that would have changed the trajectory of the race. GP, along with Bono, is considered to be the best. So this snafu was very startling and a little heartbreaking. But based on this debacle, maybe we expect too much from race engineer and driver communications.
Maybe. I mean, it's also a one-off incident. Now, granted, that's a pretty significant blunder, if you ask me. And if I were Max and came out with hard tires, I would be pretty pissed off too, because you're right, it was a no-win. How on earth did they think that those tires would be able to fire up in time with the amount of laps left? That was
Remember,
a
this was
tricky
not the
one.
only blunder.
This race, they made up for lost time and put all the incidents into one race. Because it's been a while. I can't even recall a time where Red Bull has blundered their strategy this bad, and multiple times over in a single race.
So, after the safety car, Max had unfortunate contact with Leclerc and Russell. Leclerc managed to complete the successful overtake. Russell did not. But in Max's mind, both of those incidents were those drivers driving into him, and his radios were not pleasant and were raging about people giving him positions back. And first, I couldn't even understand, is he raging against Russell or raging against Leclerc? I think he was just raging against the world. However, after his tussle with Russell, he was already destabilized. And then his team, via GP, decided to ask him to give position back to George Russell. Although Max was adamant that there was no lingering beef between him and George, we know that they still have lingering tension from last year due to George being instrumental in Max getting a one-place grid penalty in Qatar for impeding during a practice session. So this was in practice session and there was beef. This is the race. Thus, in a very charged situation for Red Bull, to make a blunder of asking Max to give a position back to his frenemy, especially after we found out the stewards were not going to penalize him for it anyway. It added to the already combustible situation, and Max snapped. He was completely at fault at driving into Russell, even though it looked like he was giving him the position back. And he definitely did it on purpose. And he even admitted it was not right and he should not have done it, which is an apology in Max speak. But Red Bull messed up his race even before that move, which cost him a 10-second penalty and dropped him to P10. My heartbreak is not that he was dropped to such a low position. It is that he felt the need to act the way he did when things were not going his way. This is the side of Max's personality that will never make him my favorite driver.
It was disappointing to watch someone at his caliber act out the way that he did. And just to clarify for newer race fans that might have any confusion on the situation, the first collision with Russell, they were not going to have him give the position back because the stewards noted that Russell was not fully in control of his car when he attempted to pass. The fact that Red Bull Racing instructed Verstappen to give the position back never should have happened. The stewards were not going to do that. It was poor miscommunication on their part. Because of this outburst, Max now has 11 penalty points on his license and is just 1 point away from an automatic race ban because 2 of his points will roll off by June 30th. It could shake up the championship fight.
I think he's already out of the championship fight. He is now 49 points behind. That is 2 wins. And I cannot imagine him picking up 2 wins and both McLarens being out of the points 2 times.
I think Max was still in it until Barcelona.
Oh. I totally agree with you. Yeah, that's why it's so disappointing for him, probably more than anyone, because he really lost his head. I still find it hard to believe that the FIA will be willing to give him a penalty point so that he would be banned. Unless Max does something as blatant as what he did in Spain, I do not think the FIA will give him the penalty points to enforce a ban.
I don't know. We'll see.
Have you seen what Toto and Horner said about the incident? I've never seen Toto trying not to blame somebody for the.
The first thing I saw from Toto was that they didn't see the data. He didn't know if there was something that happened in the car to explain it. He was trying to give Max the benefit of the doubt.
It read more that Toto was trying to find excuses for why Max did it that wouldn't be totally Max's fault.
Right.
Even more so than Horner. Which
right.
Is insane. George must feel horrible because, I mean, not so horrible because, you know, he ended up with more points, but it's not a good look when you don't have a contract and your manager and partial team owner, team principal is trying to make excuses for the guy who tried to take you out.
Now, remember, Toto and Verstappen's private jets touched down for a meeting in the spring, and we will revisit my conspiracy theory on Max leaving Red Bull. So, you never know.
We will. This is the same Toto who, according to Drive to Survive, took a step back, so crashed into Bottas because he thought that was not the behavior of a mature and professional driver.
Agreed, except he still signed Russell over Bottas, and his remorse over not signing Max would probably outweigh, and based on his comment to make an excuse for Max about his behavior against Toto's current driver, George Russell, I'd say he would probably overlook that as well. It was a little surprising to see Max Verstappen was awarded driver of the day, and I would say up until his collision with Russell, well, probably the safety car, given their three-stop strategy, how well he was doing, I would give Max driver of the day, even though I really wanted Hülkenberg or even Fernando Alonso to get it. And honestly, I was surprised that there is no black flag on that incident.
Well, the fact that he won driver of the day definitely made me lose any interest in seeing who wins it going forward. I agree with you. I think most of the voting was completed before five laps. But I also think Hülkenberg was always going to get points. It's just he might not have had this high position if not for the safety car. So I'm shocked that he would not have gotten driver of the day no matter what. I do not feel I know enough about F1 to say when a black flag is warranted, but it is possible that the stewards were swayed by the fact that Russell did not suffer much damage. And again, this is my issue with the stewards. Sometimes they take the consequences into account when they're not supposed to.
Yeah, this is where stewarding is very inconsistent. If you look at the rules for a black flag in F1, it signals an immediate disqualification. It's shown for serious rule violations like dangerous driving, which I would say what Max did to George was, even though Lando commented in the cool down room, he goes, "Yeah, I've done a move like that in Mario Kart, not in real life at the speed that they were going at."
I have to say, his comic timing was amazing because he's like, "I've done that." And you can see Oscar and Leclerc going, "Huh?" And then he goes, "In Mario Kart."
In Mario
It was
Kart.
so perfectly timed.
Which I could not imagine at those speeds. Black flags are for dangerous driving, which I would consider that to be on the excessive side of dangerous driving. And he's very lucky nothing serious happened to George or even himself, but to almost not give a more serious consequence to Verstappen for purposely crashing at high speeds like that, it's not a great precedent to set by the stewards. I don't know if a true disqualification would have been necessary, but I don't know. I mean, that was pretty outrageous.
Speaking of Russell, he got a drive-through penalty for cutting a corner
Right.
That didn't harm anyone.
Right.
So I would say this is worse.
It definitely is.
There's not enough laps for him to serve it, which is fine. It's converted to 10 place grid drop.
I would almost think a disqualification would have been warranted to teach him a lesson, but
it wouldn't, because he only got a point, so he would have just lost a point. Like, I don't think that would teach him. Disqualification for the next race, that would probably be hurtful.
That would definitely be hurtful if he couldn't even participate. Well, you know what I can't wait for? The driver team dinner at the end of the year. We have a whole season pretty much for this drama to build.
Well,
and last year, the whole empty seat, Russell moved it to the end of the table, but I can only imagine what is going to come to fruition by the time they all get together in December.
I think that's too far to wait. I think at some point they will be on the podium together. Can you imagine that cool down room? Ooh.
Or how much force can you champagne spray somebody?
At this point, I can imagine Max wielding that champagne bottle as a weapon at that point, because
basically,
he would be over it.
All right, Scuderia shenanigans. This is our dedicated space for all things Ferrari, whether it is brilliance, heartbreak, or a bit of both. Ina and I are both passengers on the Ferrari Hopium train. We unpack every strategic gamble, pit stop, panic, and glimmer of Leclerc or Hamilton magic. With this being Lewis Hamilton's first season at Ferrari, this has been so much tougher than anyone, including myself, expected. The SF25 is a tricky car to master, as we have said multiple times over. Why they decided to scrap 95% of last year's car this year baffles us both. It understeers, lacks consistent grip, and demands a driving style that has not yet clicked for him. Charles Leclerc has adapted better. Hamilton continues to struggle with confidence, especially under braking and in managing the tires. I personally believe Ferrari's problems go beyond driver adaptation. The car is highly sensitive to ride height, suffers from inconsistent downforce, and hasn't delivered on the promise of its new suspension layout. Both drivers have raised concerns, but Hamilton's frustration has been especially visible from very blunt post-race reactions to clear discomfort behind the wheel. I think even Martin Brundle commented on how you could see the car moving while he was driving it in this Grand Prix and how it was difficult to control.
Martin Brundle wasn't at this Grand Prix.
Then who was it?
Alex Brundle, his son, who sounds exactly like him.
Oh, Alex Brundle. They sound exactly the same. That's why I didn't realize it was Alex.
Yeah, Alex Brundle usually does F1 TV.
Well, I was watching F1, and I just am so used to him and Crawford.
Yeah.
In the 2025 F1 season, Hamilton has scored 71 points, but without a single podium finish in a Grand Prix. He did win the sprint race in Shanghai. This is a painful stat for a seven-time world champion. However, he has scored more points by this point in 2025 than he did in 24. He currently sits sixth in the Drivers' Championship.
Yes, and Kimi Antonelli is behind in seventh, very distant with 48 points. So I don't think Lewis is losing his sixth place anytime soon. And I just want to add that that win in a sprint race in China was the first time he achieved pole position in a sprint, his first sprint win. And that's an achievement that he didn't even achieve with Mercedes.
Yes, so see, we have glimmers of hope. However, it's really hard to watch someone of his caliber grind this hard for the results that he's coming up with. Ferrari is counting on upcoming upgrades to turn things around. So for now, the gap to the front remains painfully wide.
Everyone thought they would bring upgrades to Barcelona, but they pushed to Silverstone. The next upgrade is the rear suspension. I think the last great test will be Silverstone, which is
Silverstone.
actually very good for Lewis, right?
He
That was
always
his.
does well on that track. Yes.
And he won last year, so that brings good memories.
Yes. Hopefully, some good juju because I have to tell you, his post-race interviews where he is like, I just had a terrible day. There's nothing to say about it. I have never seen him
So
that
dejected.
dejected. Yeah, I've never seen him that dejected. And he said that this is the worst experience he's ever had in a race. I mean, now granted, I think back to Abu Dhabi 2021 being the worst experience in a race, but maybe he means physically in a car and driving it and how difficult it is.
But his form is concerning. In the race, he looked completely out of sorts. He looked very much slower than Leclerc, even in the beginning, which still angers me that Ferrari took so long to issue the team orders to have them switch.
It was lap eight.
They should have done it on lap five. Because remember, Leclerc was on softs. They should have switched because Leclerc was going a second faster than Lewis. And you can't tell me he was conserving tires. Something was going on. So I think the strategy that Ferrari employed to keep him ahead of Russell, and that's why they pitted him as early as they did, I think it may have been a bit conservative and did not help him to move forward. However, once Ferrari made a change to his front wing without telling him what that change was, which is another red mark against Ferrari as a team, he was nowhere. The fact that he kept losing positions was sad to see, especially when he got passed by Sauber, granted with new soft tires. Sauber is Ferrari's customer team, which everyone thinks is the worst or second worst on the grid. I guess third worst now because they've moved up to eight. I cannot fathom what Lewis must be thinking. And I agree with you, Aaron. He looked absolutely dejected at the end of the race.
Oh, completely. But the fact that they made changes to his front wing without telling Hamilton gives me great pause about how much deeper these challenges and tensions must be running within the team itself. I'm going to assume these are fake reports about Horner being reached out to by Ferrari because of concerns over Fred's leadership and his interesting quip back about his Italian as a It is about as good as Flavio Briatore's English.
I have to say, when we do our Drive to Survive recaps, I always pick Horner quotes because he always is very quotable. I have to say, that is gold. And I think DTS should use it whether they were at this race or not. That was just a great line.
I hope so. It was a pretty good quip. I mean, I'm usually all for some drama or conspiracy theories. However, we mentioned in a previous episode that Fred has been under fire for leading the team. He inherited a bad team from Mattia. It has been a really long time since Ferrari has been functioning where Ferrari fans expect them to be. So I just think these challenges go a lot deeper. I hope the team can find a way to work through these. If not, it is going to be a very painful remainder of the season.
With respect to Leclerc, where do I begin? He decided to go with his own unconventional strategy during qualifying, which he thinks paid off and resulted in him being P3. Actually, he said that P4 was the best that Ferrari could hope for and that he got P3 due to the late safety car. Fair. Since safety cars rarely help Ferrari, and Leclerc especially, it was a nice admission from him to celebrate his good luck for a change. However, I still struggle to see how his strategy of holding back tires and not participating in the last part of qualifying, thus ensuring that he only qualified in seventh position, helped him in his race pace. If he didn't save his tires and qualified higher, maybe he wouldn't be behind Lewis or Antonelli or maybe even Russell. And look how much quicker he could have been. Yes, he had two sets of medium tires, but the second set of tires did not produce any good results as he kept getting further and further behind Max Verstappen, who was in P3 at the time. Thus, P4 was the most likely outcome with the safety car promoting result to P3. And let's not forget Red Bull Masterclass and strategy that we already discussed. If he started higher on the grid, I think the results would have been the same, even though he would not have had the second set of new medium tires, since they really didn't help him in the race. Thus, I stand by my assessment after qualifying that his strategy was not that great, and it completely bothers me that it's his strategy and Ferrari let him call his strategy. At that point, then why does Ferrari have a strategy team? Though I'm very pleased with the result, despite all of these shenanigans, Ferrari finds themselves as number two in world constructors standings. I think whatever's happening in Mercedes, the disaster that was Red Bull this race really helped them to achieve this result because they are insanely far behind McLaren.
There is no catching McLaren for constructors. I am pretty sure they're going to run away with that unless something insanely dramatic happens. So enjoy number two in the constructors.
Not everything happens at the front of the pack, and we shine a light on the teams fighting it out in the most competitive part of the grid because sometimes the best racing isn't necessarily for P1. Let's read the grid, and how about we start with Alpine?
Pierre Gasly's P8 was his best Spanish Grand Prix result since 2019, where he also finished P8, but for Red Bull. This is only the second time this season the team has scored points in a Grand Prix. Not
I'm glad.
fantastic.
No, I'm glad he ended up in the points. He was another winner of the late safety car. But Colapinto had the worst luck in qualifying, where he looked relatively strong, maybe even ahead of Gasly's pace. Unfortunately, his car stalled before the final run in Q1, where everyone improved and he again did not make it into Q2. His race was anonymous. He ended up in the back of the grid. As his teammate was scoring points, he is not doing that much better than Jack Doohan, although he has not crashed the car this weekend as well. You cannot think that this will be enough for Alpine to retain him for the end of the year. And I hope the five race contract rumor is not true, because otherwise, I think he would be gone from the team sooner than later.
I did see something that said Flavio Briatore was already working behind the scenes to replace Colapinto given his performance. I mean, they replaced Liam with Yuki after two races. Yuki's performance in the last few races has been abysmal. And actually, Hülkenberg has now scored more points than any second seat Red Bull driver this year.
Not only that, Isaac Hadjar scored more points in this triple header than anyone at Red Bull.
Yeah, other than Max. I mean,
Oh,
this
yeah,
is.
sorry. I forget that Max is part of the team. Yes, of course.
I mean, Max has been carrying the team to get Red Bull in the constructor position that they're in anyway. But yes. So, and then I also saw something. Is it even fair to swap drivers halfway through the season? I mean, I think a team needs to do what's best for the team. But I think two races on Liam was tricky. And if you're going to apply the same methodology, then Yuki should be out. Although Christian Horner said that all they can do is give him time to help develop and cultivate him. I'm not quite sure when and where they choose to apply certain logic because it's not consistent. They're about as bad as the stewards.
They are. And one thing about Yuki that I read that I feel kind of bad about is that apparently his car was set up all wrong for flying. So
Oh,
I don't
well,
know if.
then maybe that's part of it.
But I don't know if that's the team doing damage limitation to make it seem like it wasn't Yuki, or that was the case. And then what the, like then I have more questions about this team. Like it gets more operationally horrible by the second.
Well, then did someone else leave that we don't know about? Because they have lost Adrian Nui, they lost Jonathan Wheatley, they're losing all of these key employees that make sure they have run very smooth. I mean, they've had a, they, well, and if I think about it, they had the gantry incident with the release and the slow pit stops earlier this year. So this isn't the only blunder that Red Bull has had in recent memory. It's really been since they've lost Adrian and Jonathan that they've really
Well, those
shed
were,
light on these.
yes, but Hannah Schmidt is now the head of strategy, and she's still, not only is she still there, she doesn't attend every race. She did attend this one, and this is
Yeah.
what we get.
I saw her on the
Like,
pit wall.
something is rotten in the state of Red Bull.
As we know, as these team principals say, the buck always stops with them. So, what does this mean for Christian Horner? Now, my favorite, Aston Martin. It's time to revisit my conspiracy theory that I am quite convinced is going to happen. And I'm pretty sure I'm the only one that's quite convinced.
First of all, I want to correct you. You were convinced he's going to Mercedes. I was the one who said if he's going to go anywhere, he's going to go to Aston Martin.
I'm still convinced he's leaving, and I'm not giving up on Mercedes because of the whole Toto defending his action, crashing into his driver, George Russell, because I still think a Verstappen and Kimi Antonelli pairing could be pretty phenomenal at Mercedes. But my conspiracy theory that he's going to leave Red Bull continues on because Verstappen will be able to activate his exit clause if he is in the top four of the Drivers' Championship after the Austrian Grand Prix. So, did he tank this race on purpose? Did he miss out on the points so he can move to Aston next year? Because, in addition to Max's ridiculous outburst at the end, Lance Stroll had to withdraw from the Grand Prix after experiencing pain in his hand and wrist. At first, I assumed that this was in relation to his surgery he had a number of years ago after his cycling accident where he broke both of his wrists and a toe. Reports say that he had lost his temper and had a tantrum after being knocked out at the end of Q2. And he allegedly broke equipment and swore at team members.
I saw those rumors as well, and that came out because he missed weighing in after his qualifying session, and that resulted in an investigation that ultimately did not produce any consequences. But I'm not sure if the rumors are true, especially since Aston Martin is denying them. And either way, it's a very sad story, and I would hope all drivers prioritize health over anything to do with racing.
For sure.
When we reviewed the Drive to Survive episode covering Bahrain Grand Prix when Lance returned from his horrific injury, and we talked about how it may have been too soon and he should have taken more time to recover, I hope this time he does take more time to recover. And if nothing else, it shows you that he probably cares about F1 more than we think, because according to the team, he was in pain during qualifying, even before he got out of the car.
I hate to hear that he was in pain before getting out of the car. I always thought it was too fast for him to come back to racing back in 2023, but I also think this could be a legit reason for Papa Stroll to make any changes in his driver lineup because it's a legitimate out. His son broke both of his wrists. He's now having residual effects from it and is going to have to undergo another procedure.
I agree that it could give him a more elegant way to exit, but I think Papa Stroll is still not going to remove him as a driver. If he was experiencing as much pain as was evident, why did he not withdraw sooner so that they could get a reserve driver to participate in one of the practice sessions and/or qualifying so that Aston Martin could field a second car on the grid?
I was wondering the same thing about the reserve driver. I don't know why they waited so long, but because he went through qualifying, they could not put a reserve driver in for this race. They couldn't field anybody. I'm hearing that the reports are saying they're expecting the fact that Lance withdrew to have the procedure done is that he is planning on being back for the Canadian Grand Prix, which is his home race. And originally, one of their reserve drivers was already committed to be at 24 Hours of Le Mans, so they had no reserve driver, although he has now since reprioritized F1 over Le Mans in case Lance is unable to return for Canada.
So, interesting thing about that, they actually have two reserve drivers who are doing 24 hours of Le
Right.
Mans.
Yeah.
And Drugovich, who I feel is like, it's an interesting case study because he won F2, granted, not on his first try. And then he's been stuck in this no man's land because he's the reserve driver for Alpine. He's rejected a lot of series to stay eligible to participate. So, this could be his one chance to show what he's got. And that's another point that if this was going to be the excuse, Lance would have used it to get out of even driving in Canada, but he's very adamant he doesn't want to. And I think Drugovich is very adamant that he'll give up 24 Hours of Le Mans
Right.
just for a chance that he may drive in Canada, which just shows you the dedication. So I just want to clarify one thing. The reserve driver does not, or another driver doesn't have to participate in qualifying in order to move on to the race. They just have to participate in at least one session, whether it's
Ah,
practice
okay.
session or qualifying. And then that driver who participated, their best time has to be within 107% of the fastest Q1 time. And if that happens, then that driver can participate. And that 107% rule, by the way, can be waived if all the teams agree.
We touched on Sauber and Nico's performance, but we would be remiss to leave out Gabriel Bortoleto and his performance this weekend. He finished at P12, which was his best career finish so far. It was great to see him have a solid race. And speaking of rookies, let's talk about your boy, Ollie Bearman at Haas.
Well, it may sound like a broken record, but he is still a disappointment. Ollie did not finish in the points. He also got a penalty from his tussle with Lawson. As we discussed in previous episode, it's Bearman's inconsistency, which is now I'm realizing is more of a consistency because he hasn't shown much in the past few races, and this triple header was a wash. I understand that as a rookie, you will have highs, you will have lows, but I'm losing patience with his lows. He needs to show me some glimmers of potential sooner rather than later.
Well, Williams has been showing us quite a push in their performance this season, except for this Grand Prix. Albon was another driver who got into a tussle with Lawson and Bearman, damaged his front ring twice, ultimately received a penalty as he was about to retire the car, completed the penalty, retired the car. But his qualifying was poor. Williams looked woeful. Sainz struggled. This is the first Spanish Grand Prix Sainz in his entire Formula One career did not land in the points. James Vowles gave a post-race interview explaining that it was the car and they're trying to figure out what the issue is and why the car does not perform well at this track to make sure it is not baked into the 2026. So hopefully Albon will discover his form again in Canada.
I hope so. Well, you know the team that did great? Racing Bull. Hadjar, as we already discussed, was great. He performed extremely well in qualifying, although it was so funny that he wasn't happy because, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Gasly who qualified ahead of him. So he's like, "So I'm not best of the rest." And I was like, "Oh, that's so
Oh.
sweet." But not to be undone, Lawson was looking actually pretty good. He just missed out of the points and ended up in P11. His race was undone by the safety car and not having fresh tires, which allowed Alonso to pass him on the track. I mean, I think they're in great position for a midfield team and solidified themselves currently in P6, but I think they still have a chance to challenge Williams for P5.
I am all for Hadjar carrying this team and honestly the second Red Bull seat. I saw a meme where it said that Red Bull is going to petition that There's three cars out of V-Carb and only one out of Red Bull because the second Red Bull car is so bad. As you might recall, they did win my heart in Monaco because they had such a great strategy, and it seems like they're building off of that and getting some stability within the team. It's great to see out of the Racing Bulls.
It is. This race had a little bit of everything. An incomplete grid to start, a lot of position changes in the first lap, varying tire strategy from wondering whether a one stop was possible before the race to seeing a three stop that almost worked, and a late safety car, an unheard of phenomenon in modern Formula One in Barcelona that caused chaos and a legend in the making to lose his mind. Next year of Spanish Grand Prix will be inherited by a new Madrid circuit. The Barcelona Catalunya should continue to appear on the calendar, and after the most recent race, we should welcome it and hope it continues to deliver. This triple header was exhilarating, exhausting, and excruciating at times, so it is a good thing that there will be a week's break before we will do it all again in Montreal.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite late safety car beneficiary. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.